everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
This is The Run-Through. I'm Cho Minardi. And today I'm here with Laia Garcia-Furtado, Senior Fashion News Editor of Vogue Runway. Well, Chloe, I'll do Chloe's away.
Hello, everyone. Love to be back.
We're so happy to have you back.
There's so much going on. It's a big week.
We just wrapped Milan Fashion Week.
Oh, my God.
No? And I mean, and I guess Paris has just started, too.
Paris has just started. Milan wrapped up. But before we get into that, you have a big week. We just saw the release of this Angelina Jolie digital cover.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Yes.
What is it like spending a day with her?
It was really interesting. She didn't have any of the architecture of a celebrity. There was no entourage. You know, there was no PA. It was just her. And that was the first really surprising thing, because there's just such a myth surrounding her. And she's such a huge A-list legend. And she's talked so rarely that it would be like a wall of people just to get to her. But really, it was just her and I in a room. And we sat in this space that was Basquiat's old studio.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you got to go in there.
It was hot as hell, because it was literally raw. They just signed the lease on the space. So it still had all of the things from the last, you know, occupants. There was a restaurant there. But upstairs, it felt very much like the beginnings of a studio, because it just felt like an atelier. And, and we sat on these like raw benches and yeah, we chatted. You know, I think she's in a moment where she was, you know, doing work with the UN for 20 years.
Yeah, that's also like such a big part
a big
of what
milestone.
She's done.
So yeah. She's really in a moment where she's thinking about what's next. She's finding herself again. And I think that's why this fashion project has been so interesting for her, because I think, you know, we all know that she's had a lot of life changes. She's obviously going through a quite difficult divorce. And I think she's at a moment where she's finding herself again. What does she want to say to the world? You know, how does she want to dress for the world? And she also has 6 children, and family is super important to her. And her children are involved in the project.
Yeah, that was super cool to read how, you know, her daughter like helped with the choosing the studio space.
Yeah, they walked in and wanted the space right away. And I think she felt that punk energy there. And what was kind of interesting talking to her about fashion was that it's really conversations that she's having with her kids, right? And how they like to get dressed. I think she's really committed to this idea that we need to rewear, we need to reuse, we need to mend, we need to value the sort of craft of also making. So she's got all these makers into the studio. You know, there's this like South African lace maker who's part of the project. And she's thought about what she wants when she and her family, you know, all of her 6 children, how they think about self-presentation, how they think about getting dressed and what's important to them.
It's funny, though, not to change the topic, but, you know, this idea of craftsmanship, mending, tailoring, like that's something that was really big in Milan.
I mean,
this
season, Prada.
You know,
can
Prada.
We talk? Yeah.
I mean, Prada was so beautiful.
Yeah, it was...
You have to, if you're listening, after you finish the pod, go on YouTube, look at the Prada collection. The pictures are beautiful, but you have to see these dresses in motion.
Okay.
There are these silk dresses, and as the models were walking, they had these, like, pieces of fabric flying behind. Like, it was, you know, people love to say ethereal, but that was, like, ethereal.
Wow.
They were so beautiful, and then there's, like, cool little shorts and little satin, like mules. Like, it was all very, very Miuccia.
What do you think of this shorts trend? Because I'm not convinced yet, but I know that the world loves a pantless look. So this is destined to be on Kendall Jenner any any minute now.
Yeah, I mean, she does love to go pantless. She's done it. She did that Bottega tights look from, like, last season or the season before for Street Style. I feel like it's very, like, it's half, like, remembering the early aughts thing, but I also feel like shorts are the final frontier of things that, like, haven't been appropriated in a way yet. Like, obviously, the Gen Z kids are wearing boxers. Like, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I see that on the streets.
So I think this is sort of like, well, a formal short.
They were everywhere at Milan. They were at Gucci.
Yeah, they have a new designer, Salvatore Sarno, and, you know, he's amazing. And he stripped it all back. But yeah, the first look was big coat, shorts, tank, platform loafers, beautiful chunky gold jewelry. That was actually my favorite part of the
And a lot of people were talking about the bags, the reinvention of some of those classic.
Chucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they're like, we're in the business of selling. So it's very, like, there were beautiful things and it was very considered, but I think it was also very much a pivot to selling to more people rather than selling to a few.
Right. So right. And there was another debut, right? Peter Hawkins
at Tom Ford.
A long time vet of Tom Ford.
He's been working there. He's been working with Tom Ford his entire career. He started with Tom at Gucci, then did Tom Ford menswear, and now he does it. And he looks a little bit like Tom. They wear the same glasses.
Same glasses.
Yeah.
Uncanny. And then we have our fave Maximilian Davis, who I'm speaking to on the show.
I can't wait to hear your interview because actually his collection was one of the best. I loved it. Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah.
It was so cool, so modern. Mm. And it's interesting because obviously, you know, Ferragamo is a big house with a lot of history. But I feel like maybe because there's not some sort of like instantly iconic, like, obviously shoes and bags, but in terms of the ready-to-wear, like, that doesn't exist. And he can just sort of go in there with his own vision and create.
Mm.
And this season was so good. And I loved the first two seasons, he went hard on the red.
Mm.
And then this season, he did sage green.
Mm.
And there's a sage green leather suit that's to die for.
Mm.
It was just so, I can't wait to hear. Because it was so good, so modern, so cool, so clean, just like, new, you know. I feel like we don't see a lot of new stuff these days, especially because everyone loves to be like, remember this look? Well, here it is again. I mean, I love that. I love a nostalgia. Don't get me wrong, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, I totally know what you mean. And what are you looking forward to with Paris?
Oh, my God. Well, it's going to be Sara Burton's last show at McKinney.
Right, right. Lots of farewells as well, right? God. Gabriella Hearst at Chloe.
Yeah, Gabriella Hearst at Chloe's leaving. I mean, I always want to see Miu Miu. What else is happening? Yesterday morning, everyone woke up to see, like, pictures of The Row, who has their... They don't show spring like everyone else. They show season ahead. So instead of showing spring, they're showing pre-fall 2024.
Right.
So it's like, you see these clothes and you have to wait even longer to get them. I mean, not that I can get them because they're very expensive. But still, you know, it was all very, like, loose, oversized, very The Row. But the coolest thing about it was I feel like there's a big trend now of like a non-shoe shoe.
Okay.
Which is, it's a mesh flat. It's like, it barely looks like you're wearing anything, but The Row originated it.
Mm.
And for pre-fall, they're doing these tiny little colorful jelly sandals that feel extremely like a beach shoe, except they're not. And you're supposed to just wear them with like your gown or your suit or whatever. And they're super cool. And like everyone was in my DMs this morning like, oh my God, look at this shoe.
And Dior. I haven't had a chance to fully dig into Dior yet.
Yeah, so the Dior show was actually really beautiful. It was really witchy. You know, like Maria Grazia is still doing her big, like, experiment / collaboration with all of these feminist artists. So there were, like, hints of, like, Salem witch trials. And,
okay.
And, like, it was sort of dark and moody and just like very cool, which I think reflects her in a way, because I think if you've ever seen a picture of her, she wears like sort of really heavy eye makeup and she's kind of like a lot more punk than her clothes would suggest. So that's like really interesting.
Meanwhile, I feel like everyone's talking about Taylor Swift's boyfriend and his fashion tastes. Her new boyfriend.
The football guy. But he's the fun football
guys,
guy, right?
What's his name again?
Kaylor Solsiak. That's not it.
It's something like that.
I knew
Travis
it was a
Kelce.
K.
Yeah, he's worn like Jacquemus and he's kind of a fashion plate.
Is he the one that hosted SNL?
Yes, he is.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, you like
her?
Him?
Yeah, I feel like he was charming. Good for her. You know, it's an upgrade from Matty Healy, that's for sure.
No kidding. Oh, we didn't talk about Bottega. That was amazing, too.
Bottega was amazing, and you know I think it's about their breakup.
That's what you said. You have a theory.
Because it was all maps, traveling. They're like really serious business suits, men in business wear and ties and like big bags that are just like carrying their whole bags and everything is undone and open because that's how his heart is after like he's broken up.
Okay. For everyone who doesn't know, he was dating.
So Matthew Blazy, who is who's a creative director at Bottega Veneta, was dating Peter Mulier, who is at Alaïa.
Right.
And they had been dating for like 17 years.
I didn't realize it was 17 years.
And they just broke up earlier this year.
Right.
And both stories, they both went public with the breakup in their respective profiles.
Right.
Matthew mentioned it in a New York Times profile, and Peter talked about it in the Vogue profile that's in this month's issue of Vogue, which you have to read. So Nathan Heller wrote this piece, and towards the end, when he gets into the breakup, it's like, it's so heartbreaking. They've both waited like their whole lives for this moment. Then they had, you know, they had to choose their jobs and they're broken up. Like, they share custody of their dog. I mean, obviously, you never know what happens, but in my head, they're still just, like, very much in love. And
well, it sounds
just,
like it was amicable and they, you know, obviously the distance and the workload.
Yeah. And then, you know, on the soundtrack at Bottega was Fleetwood Mac's Dreams.
And everyone is saying that is the ultimate breakup song, is it?
Yeah. It was just the first part. It's like, now here you go again. You say you want your freedom, or who am I to keep you down? Like, ugh, crying.
Oh.
Obsessed. But you know what?
Beautiful collection.
So and so full of soul. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can never say about Matthew that he does not make an empty collection. He puts his heart on the runway.
Yeah, you feel it.
You feel it.
Alaïa, that was so great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's always good to get your perspective. The Run-Through will be back in just a moment with Maximilian Davis.
Hi, we're Carlene and Jill, hosts of Breaking Beauty Podcast, the show all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty.
On our show, you're going to find hella inspiring guests like Emily Weiss of Glossier,
and you'll get beauty tips galore from the top pros in the industry, like Kim Kardashian's makeup guru, and you'll hear skincare secrets from the likes of Dr. Pimple Popper.
Plus, you'll get shopping help with our Damn Goods episodes, where we review the latest products hitting store shelves to let you know what's actually worth your money.
Listen every Wednesday to Breaking Beauty Podcast.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
And we're back, and I get to speak to Maximilian Davis, creative director of Ferragamo. You know, I've known Max for a really long time, so I was so excited to speak to him. I remember when we sat down over lunch in London 3 years ago and he showed me his first collection. So this was a conversation that was a long time coming. So much has happened, you know. He launched his own brand and then he became the creative director of this massive Italian house. So I was dying to speak to him and the conversation was great. So here we go. Hi, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I was just remembering the other day back to our first proper meet, which was at one of my favorite restaurants in London.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which yes. has since moved, relocated, but it's on Warren Street near where I lived growing up. And we met and you'd just kind of conceived of your first collection. Your namesake collection before you were at Ferragamo. So this was a long time ago. So you and I have been on parallel tracks because you were just launching something entirely new, and we had this wonderful conversation about about what informs the way you design. I think at the time you were at Dover Street Market and I was begging you to get me a discount, and maybe you got me a discount.
Of course.
I still have the shirt that you got me the discount for, so I'm very happy.
Amazing.
You've had such a rapid ascent, you know, like you've gone from, you know, you're not even 30 and you're at the helm of a huge Italian house. And, you know, you always, even from the beginning, had this cool breeze about you, like very level-headed and a very clear sense of how you saw fashion, how you saw the world.
But yeah, I think obviously when we first met, or when I was first talking to you about my collection before it was a brand, that was the first time I was honestly just focusing on myself and focusing on what I wanted to say out loud and publicly, especially me working with other brands. I used to work with Urs Bonner and assist and freelance for other London designers. I was always kind of researching subjects that they had an interest in, or kind of giving them information that was important to them. And I never felt, there was always like some sort of disconnect. You know, I never felt like I was so, like this didn't feel personal for me. And at the point where I kind of took a break from working in fashion, my grandmother passed away. And I just kind of wanted to take a break and just focus on myself and my family. But that also gave me, or kind of pushed me in a direction to kind of just learn more about my heritage, my Caribbean upbringing, which I never questioned, or I never kind of, I never questioned. But when my grandmother passed away, I really kind of just wanted to remain closer to her. And I was kind of going through all of her belongings, her jewelry, her photo albums. And also I was just asking my mother and father questions, you know, I was asking questions, but then also that moment when she passed away was just before COVID. And then we went into the lockdown, and then the BLM movement happened, you know, and this is where kind of I felt a lot more comfortable talking about like my heritage and my blackness and just really having a sensibility to it a lot more. So that's when I was like, okay, look, let me look into my Trinidadian heritage, or my grandmother's heritage of growing up in Trinidad. And every year me and my sisters would go to carnival, and they would play during mass, and everyone would get dressed up, like my grandmother, her sisters, her brothers would get dressed up. And it was always a moment that the whole family would come together, they would celebrate. It was like a moment of joy and happiness. And there's a few things that kind of like brought my family together, that bring me and my friends together. So music is one of them, food is one of them, and kind of dressing is one of them. And the carnival was a moment where people would kind of create their own looks to either be a part of a band or a group, or they would create their own looks to kind of just be, just to show their creativity or their freedom, you know? But what I was kind of more questioning was like, what's the reason of carnival? What's the point of carnival? You know, this just seems like one big celebration, but I'm not sure if everyone that's attending knows what they're celebrating. And this is where I kind of understood that this was a moment of where slavery was abolished in 1834. And this was a celebration of freedom for our ancestors, you know? And this really led me into looking at multiple artists or painters in that, from that period, which I still reference today. But again, this is where I kind of got that mix of the Caribbean ease and this kind of looking at Renaissance statues and paintings for the way of dressing, especially my first collection. That whole process really allowed me to kind of, or everything that happened allowed me to really focus on making work that was a lot more personal for me.
Taking on a big house, it's a different proposition than it is than having your own brand under your own name. I know that there's that signature red, which has become sort of part of the brand. And I've been to Trinidad twice, two of my most life-changing trips. I've played mass.
Amazing.
I know. Yeah. So the energy of carnival in Trinidad is like nothing that you've ever felt. When you were thinking about conceiving of, okay, well, how do I approach this? Like, what were the things that you wanted to, that you knew you wanted to infuse into this brand, or what parts of yourself did you want to bring?
Well, I feel like with my personal brand with Maximilian, it really played on elegance and it really played on sensuality. And when I was researching into the brand before I was accepted for the position, that's what I was really drawn to. You know, the previous collections that they did in the 90s and also the 80s, there was like a very high level of elegance and sensuality in terms of the fabrication, the tailoring, the construction, and also the craftsmanship. Then once I started to research more into it, there was, I started to learn about more about Salvatore and the family. And one of the things that really kind of made me feel happy in a sense of connecting is that Ferragamo is built on their family. You know, the family is the people that really kind of kept this brand going. And one of the reasons why I started my brand was for my family. You know, it was based on my grandmother, and that was my first connection. The second thing was obviously with Maximilian, my main color was red. You know, my first lookbook, everything was red in the background. The Trinidadian flag was red, black and white. The branding of Ferragamo was a very deep red, you know, so there's a lot of kind of similarities. But then also when I was looking at the prints and also the silks and the archives, it's, it was very kind of basing it on exotic animals or kind of like Caribbean-ness to it. And there's kind of this effortlessness that was running through the research that I was finding. Or when I was being interviewed, I really felt that the brand has so many pillars to stand on that I didn't want to come in and disrespect what the brand has built so far for itself. I wanted to come in and give it a new energy, re-energizing what the brand stands for, what they've done in the past. And I came in, I was hired to kind of bring a new audience to the brand. You know, the brand wasn't failing. It just needed a new light to shine on the brand. And I felt I need to pay respects to what was here, what's been done before, you know? And I think with the first collection, it was really trying to stay true of the Italianness, the house codes, but then also kind of bringing a freshness in terms of the aesthetic and some of the looks as well. But I think with the second one, it was really trying to understand, or the second collection was really trying to understand the silhouettes and understand who the Ferragamo woman is and make it a lot more clear. And the show that we just had is where I really wanted to mix the Caribbean-ness and also the Italian-ness together in one.
People have really responded to this new collection, I feel.
No, definitely. The response that we're getting or that we had is really, I'm really happy. You know, I'm really, really happy. And my team are super proud. And we're honestly, it's a great feeling. It really feels like a progression from the first and the second one.
Yeah, and I love that your family were all there. I heard that your your grandmother taught you to sew. Is that right? When you were six?
Yeah. So my grandmother taught me to sew when I was six. Basically, she was always making like her cushions, her skirts with elasticated waistbands, or her like curtains or like blouses. And yeah, she taught me how to use a sewing machine when I was like six or seven. And then I think when I was like around seven is when the harem pants came back in trend. And I remember using like
MC Hammer.
Exactly. I remember using like a jumper from Marks and Spencer's and turning it upside down and closing the neck to make it harem pants, you know? So that was like one of the first things that I made. And I remember before I could even sew, I remember just cutting like my sister's jeans or like my jeans and trying to make mini bikinis for my sisters that couldn't fit them at all. But no, honestly, like I think with my grandmother, just always making things or sewing around me was kind of the starting point. But then also my sister studied fashion design.
Right.
My father studied fashion design as well. So it's something that I was really kind of surrounded by growing up.
My mom does not love fashion. So I love that you came from a family of people who really appreciated style and fashion. Like, what were the kind of family outings that you would do?
So the thing, say like growing up in Manchester, well, at the time, there wasn't many luxury designer brands as in the stores. And it's always kind of in department stores. So it's kind of like a selected selection of the collection that you'd find from those brands. But my father did a lot of work in London. So maybe every month or once a month, we would go to London. And this is where we could go to the flagship stores. So like the Versace store, or the Machina store, like all of them. And I remember going in and I remember going into the Versace store, and this was the moment where Beyonce Crazy in Love came out, I think,
yeah.
Where she's wearing the orange Versace dress.
Yeah.
So I walked in and I remember seeing that dress and I screamed. I like almost cried. I almost cried. No, honestly, because it's something that I think when you grow up outside of like a main city and you don't have access to, well, at that time, wasn't that easy to have access to kind of luxury fashion.
Mm.
Everything was on a screen. Everything was on paper. You know, it was very difficult to find or to touch those pieces. So yeah, that sense of reality really hit me when I stepped into the store. That was like my first, that's a moment that I can really remember.
I think people who come from London just forget that. They forget that there's a really specific experience to living outside of, and what it's like, you know. And I went to college in Manchester, and I actually really appreciated the style of Manchester. Can you describe like what Mancunian style is like? I really appreciate it, and like coming from Manchester, has any of that in you influenced you?
I feel that Manchester, the Mancunian part of me, is like people are very laid back and very open. And
they're they're the nicest.
They're super friendly. Super friendly. I want to say too friendly, but
and honest.
There's no bullshit. But everyone's super friendly, and I think that also the club scene, the music scene, was so huge there.
That's why I moved there.
I feel like a lot of people were kind of dressing, or what I was growing up with, was people were dressing to kind of go to the club. So this really had an impact on how I wanted to dress, you know, especially with my sisters being a 10-year gap between me and them. And I was always looking up to my sisters and like how they were dressing or watching what they were wearing when they were going to go out. So they were always wearing like the miniest skirts, and then they put like the biggest jumper on top of it to hide how short the skirt was. So that kind of, so obviously to hide it from my parents, but that really had an effect of seeing how my mother would dress and seeing how my sister would dress. And when I kind of launched my brand, or even how I'm designing or how we design now, is that we want to have a collection that's for the whole family, you know, and trying to style it in ways or show it in ways that is suitable for one person but then suitable for someone else. You know, I remember saying that my first collection, I would put like the shortest skirt with like the longest like frock coat, you know, whereas my mum would wear the coat and my sister would wear the skirt. Like, I remember there was one time going to my first Holy Communion, and my sister was wearing like a mini like Rara skirt. And then she came in with like a racer, like a racer vest. And my mum was like, "Where do you think you are going dressed like this?" She's like, "No, go back and get changed." And she put a blazer on top of the outfit, and that made my mum feel a lot more comfortable. So it was like those kind of elements of using tailoring to kind of elevate your look in a way and kind of make it a bit more acceptable for church was kind of like a process or a motto that I kind of still use for today.
How old were you when you moved to London? Because I always think about the club scene in London, and I think about the creative scene that is there now, and the creative scene that you know you were part of and you are part of. It's very much rooted in like club life, nightlife. I remember watching the video for your first presentation, and it just felt like, oh my God, this is like a sort of a beautiful fantasy of like actually, and it infused with all of the kind of like grit and soul of going out in London, right? Like, what was it like moving there? And just, I want to know what you felt like finding that and discovering all of that.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.
I moved to London when I was 18, and at that point I was just started going out in Manchester, and I was so ready to move. I was so ready to just like find myself and find like my people, and but I didn't know what to look for. I had no idea where to go. So obviously when I first moved, I was staying in like student accommodation and halls, and I was going to like the mainstream like clubs, so like Heaven, Fabric.
Oh yeah, you went real mainstream.
I went real mainstream, but luckily I met a few people. I met a few people in queues at the bar, and that's when I kind of discovered like East London at the time was very like really cool and where the underground music scene was happening. And at that point, I think I had a DM, like a direct message on Instagram from Misha Notcliffe,
My
casting.
Yeah.
He does my casting now for Ferragamo. And she asked me to go to a Liam Hodges casting, which was taking place.
Liam Hodges is a designer in London.
Yeah. So I went to the Liam Hodges casting and I called my parents when I was outside saying, why am I here? Why am I like going to this casting? Like, just go in, see what it's like. If not, just walk out. Everything's fine. Don't worry. I walk in. Misha's like, hi. Take a seat. Like, it's fine. Don't worry. And in my mind, I said, what on earth is happening here? You know, like, why is she so friendly? Why is she so nice? She's so welcoming. And then I think I got booked for like one show. I think like a Helen Lawrence show or something. And I think Misha was casting it again. And that's when she invited me to come to one of her nights, which was the PDA night in Dalston. And that's where I honestly met my closest friends today. So I met like Ibrahim Kamara, who's a stylist. I met Virginie Romero, who's my hairstylist now. I met everyone there, honestly. But when I first went to these nights, this is when I really felt at home. I really felt connected with the people around me. And I think this was a moment where there was like a sense of freedom in the way of people were dressing, the way that people were behaving. And everyone was kind of just dressing, or everyone was coming together to really see what people were wearing. You know, it was like the one night where people would dress up and call each other to make sure we're not wearing the same thing or the same shoe.
PDA was a club night and held in East London. And it's such a singular and amazing look that I want you to describe like what you might see at a PDA party, because they were kind of legendary.
The way to describe it, I want to say strings, a lot of strings. a lot of color, a lot of embellishments. I wouldn't say glamorous. I really wouldn't say glamorous. I think there's definitely a rawness to the outfits. I would say there's a lot of stretch fabrics. You know, everything was like bodycon. Everything was to show your figure and to show like your outfit and just make you feel good. But also because it gets very warm in the club, you know, so people would wear a lot less than they would wear on the day to day. So
what kind of music would Misha and the crew play?
So I think the start of the night, you would have a mix of kind of like your R&B classics. And then you'd have a bit of like funky house from like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Then it would go into like my friend Carrie, Miss Carrie Stacks, who's also an artist. She would really just mix that Mariah Carey with like the most scariest like heavy metal song. It's really hard to explain what the genre was, but I would say that what Misha would do in terms of the lineup, each DJ would be known for playing one kind of genre. So for example, like Yasmina Dexter, Pandora's Jukebox, who's kind of at that time was playing a lot of like techno, a lot of kind of like house music, would come in and play that. And then you would have maybe like Akin or Hassani, he would play like really like Afro beats or kind of like R&B or kind of like your funky house. So it was really kind of like a mix of music that really was very uplifting and also a lot of like unheard or unseen artists and sounds. I remember there was kind of a lot of Kalela unreleased music that was being played there. And also kind of like LSD XOXO was playing there and releasing a lot of the music there for the first time. So honestly, it's a mix. It's really a mix of kind of like creativity and random sounds, but then also your R&B, early noughties classics.
I feel like you continue to have like a connection with music, musicians. I know you're friendly with Kalela and you've dressed her. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I remember when you were telling me that Rihanna and A$AP Rocky ordered the collection separately.
Yeah. No, honestly, so that they were the first order before the stores that I had. So they ordered the first collection. They did like a very big order of like the jeans, the dresses. And I was not even expecting any of that. I really wasn't expecting someone at that level to really support such a young designer. And I think at that moment, the brands or the stores or the stores that were supporting young designers were kind of like Browns and also Nessa Porter just started at that point as well. So honestly, to have musicians or creatives supporting young talent was something I wasn't ready to accept. Mm. Well, I had to, obviously had to accept it because I was broke. But I honestly am super grateful because at that moment was those kind of orders really allowed me and my brand to kind of take the next step.
I know. And now you're doing like things for like Beyonce. I mean, when Beyonce comes calling, what is it like? What's the experience of making a custom piece for someone like her for the Renaissance Tour?
Well, that actually happened from when we did the Fall Winter show in February. Her stylist was there and she sent a picture of the Lame dress to my PR, one of my best friends, Charlotte Irish. sent it to her and said, we want this look for Beyonce. And again, me being me, I didn't believe it. I was shocked. I had to see the message, the text message, before I accepted it. And at that moment, that look had to go on hold. You know, like we weren't allowed to learn that look with anyone.
Wow.
And we weren't allowed to make anything else in that fabrication. That look was reserved on hold for Beyonce. And it was on hold for months, like maybe 3-4 months before we could actually start the conversation. And they came back to us and said, yes, we really want this lame fabric, but we want to see more of like the capes. We want to see more kind of like drama. And they kind of gave us a brief of like what the show or the Renaissance Tour was about. And me and the designers all sat down together, did some research, put together references. And we started to kind of like design maybe like 9 to 10 options of what the looks could be with the lame. And then we made the look and we sent it off to be fitted. And then that was it. We made the final piece and we didn't know when she was going to wear it. We had no idea.
Oh my God.
So when I went to the Paris tour.
Oh, so you've been, you've had Renaissance experience.
Of course. Of course. I've had the Renaissance experience. She didn't wear it, but she wore amazing other brands and other designers. But then I remember waking up at maybe like 6 a.m. and I was just being tagged in Ferragamo, Beyonce's wearing Ferragamo, like blah, 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 blah. And yeah, it just happened. We didn't know when it was going to happen. We knew it was going to happen at some point. We had no idea of when, what time, what day.
Congratulations.
No, thank you. Honestly, big up Beyonce.
What did you wear to the Renaissance Tour? Because I felt like for me, people watching and seeing everybody dressed up was part of the experience.
Definitely part of the experience. And I'm definitely not one to dress to give people an experience. You know, I like to kind of play.
I know you're, just so everyone knows, Max is wearing a collared white shirt.
Yes, I'm wearing a collared white shirt from Supreme. I like to dress down. I like to just dress and blend into the background. So I think I was probably wearing a black trouser and a black t-shirt and maybe a black jacket. You know? But
Low
honestly,
key.
I think what I find so amazing is like people really put a lot of effort and time into creating looks for the Renaissance Tour. You know, and I think that's so amazing that one person can have that effect on people wanting to kind of dress like them or them being an inspiration, you know? I, like, one of my designers on the team found a girl on TikTok recreating the faux garment look, and she did it very well. So congrats. But I think honestly, props to her.
It feels like a kind of a nice full circle moment to happen.
Definitely full circle.
So tell me about life in Milan. What are the biggest differences between Londoners or Brits, Mancunians and the Milanese? What have you learned?
Well, the Londoners, they're always focused. They know where they're going. Right. You know, they're very like, they're rushing to go somewhere, you know? Whereas in the morning in London, you're fighting to get on the tube, you're fighting to get on the bus, you're basically being pushed off because there's not enough space.
Oh, the tube. I'm not looking forward to that.
Whereas in Milan, I must say, everyone has like an effortlessness about them. Everyone's kind of just taking their time, strolling to work, stopping off at like the local cafe and having a morning espresso and a croissant, a brioche, as they call it. Yeah. It's a lot more relaxed and everything's kind of at its own pace.
I can imagine. And also the cappuccinos, they just don't compare. You can't actually drink coffee anywhere in the world. I only drink coffee in Italy.
You can't have coffee anywhere in other than Italy in the world. You can't have pasta anywhere else. The tomatoes here.
You've always been such a joy to speak to. So I was really looking forward to our conversation.
Likewise.
And it was just as great as when we first spoke. So
of course, it's like,
and that was only so much has happened, and that was like three years ago. It was the pandemic.
Ago. I've been at Ferragamo now for over a year and a half, and then I had Maximilian for like a year and a half as well. So it's like just over 3 years ago.
Well, I hope I get to one day have another sit down with you in person.
Oh, of course.
Because it's all of them. But
anytime.
This has been great. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Congratulations.
So thank you. Thank you again.
Bye.
Thank you.
That's it for the show today. See you next week. The Run Through of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and Gabe Quiroga and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye.
Get balanced or thrive trying. My name is Les, and I'm the host of Balanced Black Girl, a podcast dedicated to helping you feel your best. Join me for casual conversations about what it means to live a well-rounded life. I cover everything from how to make friends as an adult, to how to create a workout routine that works for you, to how to practice better financial wellness. Tune in for approachable conversations with wellness thought leaders and inspiring guests, as well as intimate solo chats with me for relatable advice. Follow wherever you get your podcasts and look out for new episodes every Tuesday.
From PRX.